Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. It's to the meeting of Cabinet on the 14th of March 2022. We're at 6:30. We will start with item one, apologies for absence. I can see everyone's here. Item two, declaration of interest. Do we have any declarations of interest? No. Item three, to approve the minutes of the previous. Have you seen the minutes? Does anybody have any suggestions or concerns, questions? No, I shall sign those in a moment then. There's no urgent business. Item four. Item five, to see the forward plan. Chief Exec.
Thank you, Leader. This is the forward plan from the 1st of March right the way through to the 30th of June this year. Happy to take any questions on the forward plan.
No questions. No questions, thank you. So item six, scrutiny review of supporting and engaging communities. Can I ask Councillor Wyman and or Councillor Clark to present, please?
Thank you, Chair. We're both going to present, if that's okay with you,
sure.
Chair. First of all, good evening, everyone. As you know, I'm the Chair of Scrutiny, Community Regeneration, Environment, Health and Wellbeing. First of all, I'd like to thank Dan over here for obviously being the lead officer in with this report. Also like to thank our subgroup, the lead councillor, Councillor Clark, who will take over from me in a second or two, Councillor Hussain, Councillor Legg and Councillor Gould. So the sort of you've all seen the report, I know. But just to go to 1.4, what are the core questions? You know, what lessons have we learned from the first lockdown, and what have been implemented for the second, and improvements can still be made. What can be done to maintain the momentum of volunteering which has been generated in response to the pandemic crisis? How are the community responses to the virus managed, and how do organisations link with local people? So what is the purpose to the review? In one sentence, to understand how during the pandemic, communities have been engaged with what has been done to support them through, obviously, these unprecedented times. So with that, I'm going to ask Councillor Clark to take over because, as I say, he was the lead councillor, so I think that's certainly the right thing to do.
Yep. So I won't dwell too long on the detail of the report, but essentially we consulted a range of different organisations across East Staffordshire, most notably BACT, as well as Support Staffordshire, to find out how had groups adapted to COVID, how had new groups formed during this time, and more importantly, how can we come out of the other side of COVID and recover from this. I think it highlighted a lot of themes that one of the things the pandemic brought out was an appetite amongst the population to get involved and to find ways to help their local community. But it also presented a challenge to existing groups of how they could adapt and operate within kind of the new structure and remote ways of working and everything there. As we kind of get out to the other side of it, out to the other side of the pandemic, I think the key factors that we identified as part of this is that it's not necessarily East Staffordshire Borough Council's role to be the main instigator of forming and maintaining these groups. But what we did find is that the apparatus for them to operate was there, but residents and these groups that were emerging just needed signposting to them. And I think this is kind of where the bulk of the recommendations come from, in how do we create a greater relationship amongst all of the groups with these support networks. And I think one of the logical areas of this is giving the tools to empower local councillors to be that conduit into their local community, to be the conduit into these local groups, and to ultimately link up with that support package. That's where the thrust of these recommendations come from, in terms of how do we increase the knowledge of local members, how do we make sure that the existing groups are out there, have a role and have their voice heard amongst the council, which is where the recommendations around increased scrutiny, cooperation with the groups come from. And then I think a final point also worth making is that one of the things that a lot of support groups and community groups have seen over the past few months as they've come out of COVID is that now a lot of funding opportunities have diverted to COVID recovery, which actually means in terms of the BAU day-to-day, there's a gap in that funding for certain groups to actually continue with what would be their normal activity. And there's almost, although there's not necessarily a narrowing of funding out there, there's a narrowing of funding opportunities, which I think presents a role for ESBC of how do we potentially set up our grant schemes to support those, as well as how do we then use our apparatus on the website and potentially officer time in the council to further help these organisations maintain and find that funding. That's a very quick summary of the report and the recommendations. Happy to take any questions on those.
Do you have any questions? Councillor Peters.
Thank you, Adam. It was indeed a comprehensive report, but fell short as far as I'm concerned in several areas, and I'd welcome your view on what I'm about to say. You talked about the communities, but there's no mention of the Muslim community, and the Muslim community clearly stepped up with ESBC to address that specific group. And I paid tribute to the mosques and the people who were at the mosques and all the work they did during the early part of the campaign. ESBC and the Muslim community, thanks to the CEO, worked exceptionally well on this aspect. So why is it that you make no reference to the Muslim community in the document that you're submitting to us tonight? Because if we were to have another pandemic, lessons learned, you may well have picked up some very, very interesting lessons from how the Muslim community performed, because I think they set the bar to some regard. So I'd welcome a comment on what I've just said, if I may.
I think that perfectly highlights the point of these recommendations, in that we know these groups are out there and operating quite well on their own. We know that there are groups out there that are operating that potentially need more help. But what we need is that link into the community. And I think it's one of the things it's quite difficult to break down those barriers and identify these groups when they are potentially operating independently or within their communities, to make sure that they don't fall under the radar and that the work they're doing and that the things that we can learn from them can be carried forward. So I think that perfectly highlights the point of the recommendations here. Because I'd also point out as well that I think one of the gaps in the report is also in regards to Uttoxeter and some of the organisations kind of towards the north of East Staffordshire. And I also think there's gaps in there in terms of organisations that aren't necessarily recognised groups but still have a role and had a role during the pandemic, such as community centres and things like that. So whilst I appreciate that the report doesn't cover all possible aspects, I think that highlights and validates the recommendations that we do need to make sure we have these routes into all communities so that we can help them all and take them all forward. I appreciate your comments. I also know that Councillor Hussein was a part of this grouping, could have brought those independently on his own as well. So I think we'll probably agree to disagree on some of those aspects of your comment.
Councillor Wyman.
Thank you, Chair. Just Councillor Peters, can I just draw your attention to 2.4 on responses to the COVID pandemic? And it does say, as a community, support and goodwill, a range of organisations have responded to the challenges posed by the pandemic, not only established organisations such as local authorities and charities, but informal organisations and individual volunteers, each had a pivotal part in the response. It doesn't mention, as you pointed out, the Muslim community, but you can see that does, you know, that sort of encompasses quite a wide range, as you can imagine. I just want to just point that out, Chair. Thank you.
Councillor Faulkner.
Thank you, Chair. I'm quite happy with the report. I think, like Councillor Peters, I believe it covers all of our groups and all of our community, and if we start mentioning a specific group and a specific community, we then get into the realm of trying to mention all of them, whereas what Councillor Wyman and Councillor Clark are saying, they have representatives from many organisations, many communities, and they have reached out and touched them. I think this is a report where the summary and the recommendations are going to be extremely valuable in the coming weeks when we handle the refugee crisis from Ukraine. We have £10,500 per refugee that come into the borough, and we have yet to understand how we can use those funds, but we have a very willing volunteer sector here that we've tapped into and are looking for ways to help our community. And this is a golden opportunity to actually use the benefits we get from this report and the information we get from this report to actually use that voluntary sector and ensure that all Ukrainian refugees are assisted in the best possible manner. We can be proud of how East Staffordshire Borough Council handle this and move forward. So great work, and I hope that we can build on it for the future. Thank you.
Councillor Ashcroft.
Yeah, just to follow on from Ray, actually, 6.7, it actually says review signposting of volunteer organisations on our website. So I think that might cover some of what Councillor Peters was on about earlier.
Okay, thank you. So I think I'm very happy with all the recommendations, happy to propose them and accept them as a cabinet. I think they are largely around work in progress and are designed to help highlight some of the issues that Councillor Peters has raised as well, potentially. I think 6.2 and 6.4 is entirely within the control of the scrutiny groups themselves. But still happy to move those recommendations with a seconder. We're happy to support those as a Councillor Faulkner. We're happy to support those as a cabinet. All those in favour. Thank you. So we'll thank you, Councillor Wyman, Councillor Clark, and all members of the scrutiny groups that have worked on this over the last few weeks. You can stay for the rest of the meeting if you like, or you can vacate. Yeah, sure. Yeah. So we'll move on to item 7, quarter 3 revenue and capital outturn report 2021-2022, and Sal Khan's going to present this item for us.
Okay, thank you, Leader. So this is the third quarterly report for the financial year 2021-2022, and it presents a forecast outturn position in relation to the usual areas of the revenue budget, the capital programme, treasury and risk management activities. In terms of the revenue budget, the budget for 21-22 of £13.371 million includes a corporate provision of £1.3 million for COVID-19 related pressures, and this was balanced by taking into account £1.1 million from reserves. This recognised that at the time of setting the budget, there was a high degree of uncertainty and a possibility of significant volatility within the budgets. What this report highlights is that whilst there still remains some uncertainty and forecast net pressures against the pre-COVID-19 service budgets, after taking into account the corporate budgets and the provision for COVID-19 pressures, we're actually forecasting a position which will only require a minimal drawdown on reserves of £15,000. So the forecast outlook for the year at the end of quarter three is better than anticipated when the budget was set, which is largely due to the success of the vaccine rollout, and that whilst the Omicron variant initially seemed to pose a significant threat for quarter three onwards, this hasn't really materialised to the degree we've previously seen. So in section four of the report, there are details of the most significant variations against budgets at this point in the year. And these include arts, brew house and functions with a pressure of 106,000, community and open spaces with a pressure of 337,000, the environment section with a saving of 135,000, environmental health with a saving of 126,000, leisure with a saving of 9,000, and the corporate budgets with a forecast underspend of £1.2 million. As usual, there is a full schedule of variances attached at Appendix A to the report. In terms of the capital programme, the Council has approved capital spending plans totaling £9.5 million, and these are set out within Table 6.1. There's further narrative provided in Section 6, which also provides a list of the capital receipts that have been received during the year. In terms of Treasury management activities, details of investments and borrowing are provided in Section 5 and at Appendix B to the report. At the 31st of December, borrowing stood at £11 million and our investments stood at £66.1 million. The investment returns to the end of December averaged 0.05%. In terms of risk management, Appendix C contains the most significant risks facing the Council, including actions that have been identified to mitigate these risks as at the end of December 2021. And the recommendations are detailed at Section 12 of the report. And on that note, Leader, happy to answer any questions.
Thank you. Is there any other members of Cabinet have any questions or comments? Councillor Sankey.
Thank you, Leader. I'd just like to sort of reinforce what a lot of the points that Sally's made. It is a very, very positive report. I mean, looking back, £1.2 million from reserves. Thanks to a lot of prudent financial management, we've actually come back and managed the risks, and we're now only 15K at end of quarter three. And I think we shouldn't lose sight of that. That's a really positive thing. Investment returns, although indicated low then, we know that they're going to rise due to the interest rates, and that, so another positive. And the capital programme identified there is progressing well, and I think that ought to be highlighted that you know, the key item in there was around the vehicles, where we spent £3.1 million of the £3.7 million. So again, another very positive thing aspect. So I did mention that we've got a full set of risks and done that. However, we should note that the current tragedy in the UK is not specifically mentioned, and it does need to be picked up in future reports when we pick that up, which we've talked about. Thank you, Leader.
Thank you. Any other comments? So this is to be noted, so I'm not going to take a vote on this, guys. So thank you for that, Sal. Item 8, Corporate Plan Performance, Quarter 3. Corporate Plan Performance Report, Quarter 3. And it's Dan Arnold to present.
Thank you, Leader. So the purpose of this report is to provide updates on progress at the end of Quarter 3 of the current financial year towards achieving the priorities set out in the Council's Corporate Plan. There are 129 indicators in total for the three corporate priorities, and as usual, each target has been graded using the red, amber and green scoring system. Out of the 129 targets, 112 are green, 1 is amber, 9 are red, 5 are not yet due to be reported, 2 have been deferred. So of the 122 live targets, 91.8% are green, 0.82% are amber and 7.38% are red. Full performance information on all corporate indicators can be seen in Appendix 1. However, a summary for each corporate priority and cabinet portfolio is shown at Table 2 at Paragraph 5.4. Paragraph 5.5 details the targets that have been given a red or amber status. An update is provided for each target in the table. Table 4, paragraph 5.6, highlights the targets that are recommended for deferral. So it's recommended that targets CR18 and CR21 are deferred to 22-23. Table 5, paragraph 5.7, highlights those targets that are recommended to be deleted. So, in summary, another positive report for quarter 3 this financial year, with over 91% of targets green. And the recommendations of the report are to consider the performance at the end of the third quarter of the 21-22 financial year, to defer the targets as listed in Table 4, and to delete the targets as listed in Table 5. Thank you.
Thank you. Is there any questions or comments on this? No? So the just for CR18 and CR21, good reasons why we need to defer those two. Good that I think it's positive that we're not being deleted altogether, though. So, and some and those will be picked up in the next corporate plan that we'll be presenting in a week's time to full council. So, don't think this is to be noted. No, we have to take a vote on these. So, remove the recommendations in paragraph 12. Just to consider, but then to defer the targets set out in Table 4 and to delete targets set out in Table 5. Have a seconder, please. Cast Ashcroft, all those in favour? Thank you, that's unanimous. We'll move on to item 9, Emergency Planning Recovery Update Report. And it's Dan Arnold again to present.
Thank you, Leader. So, as usual, this report provides a review of local activities that contribute to East Saffir's recovery from the COVID-19 pandemic. In terms of the national context, everyone will be aware that the Prime Minister has set out the government's plan for living with and managing COVID, and all remaining domestic COVID regulations restricting public freedoms ended on the 24th of February. The table on page 7 of the report provides a summary of the activities undertaken in the usual four thematic areas of focus, and the subsequent pages in the report provide more detail on each of those activities. But I'll just take this opportunity to point out a few of the updates. The Omicron Additional Restrictions Grant Scheme application process is live for those businesses operating or trading from properties located within the borough which have been severely impacted by coronavirus restrictions and the Omicron variant. The Omicron Hospitality and Leisure Grant application process is live for a single one-off payment for businesses operating or trading from a property that is assessed for business rates. Burton Market Hall has announced they'll be hosting an increased schedule for its crafts market during 22. East Staffordshire has been identified as one of the areas to receive support from the High Street Task Force, and the Council will be putting forward youth Oxeter to participate in the programme. 9 Staffordshire councils have pledged to work closer together and pursue a county deal with the government under its levelling up agenda. As part of the council's work to celebrate the Jubilee, the Brew House are working with numerous partners to put on a large celebratory weekend called the Big Burton Jubilee, which will take place on the Washlands and Staple Gardens. As part of the Climate Change Action Plan, the Council will be setting up a member climate change group in the next financial year, which will focus on and help strengthen the Council's work on climate change. And the Brewhouse has launched its bumper spring programme of events. The recommendation of the report is to note the updated detail within the report. Thank you, Leader.
Thank you. Does any members of Cabinet have any comments or questions on this report? Again, they need to be noted, so I'm not going to take a vote on this. Thank you, Dan. Item 10, Brownfield Regeneration Framework. And Thomas Deary to present, please.
Thank you, Leader. So this report presents the Brownfield Regeneration Framework. That's a document that replaces the 2017 Brownfield Strategy that was approved at Cabinet 5 years ago. The framework sets out guidance and principles through which the Council will undertake or facilitate interventions that regenerate brownfield land and deliver quality places and affordable housing. To that end, it sets out how the Council can continue to utilise Section 106 commuted sums to gap fund affordable housing developments, but it also outlines guidance on how the Council might directly deliver these schemes using the funds ourselves. So some of the guidance considerations within the framework are things like whether the use of funds either adds value to existing schemes or addresses financial viability on projects, the rate at which funding could typically be provided to schemes, except in exceptional circumstances where the Council considers an intervention to be of strategic importance, How to ensure Section 106 funds are used proportionately on developments that are of a mix of uses to make sure that it's proportionate to the element of affordable housing, and how the Council will ensure that properties constructed as affordable housing remain at affordable levels for future occupiers. So the full framework itself is appended to the report, and I'm happy to take any questions on that, Leader.
Thank you, Tom. Members of Cabinet, Councillor Faulkner.
Thank you, Chair. Just a quick word to say we debated this at length in LDL a couple of weeks ago, and I'm delighted that we are able to support people who are vulnerable and need affordable housing, and this actually helps us to do that, and working with our partners we are able to help the vulnerable and the homeless much better than we were in the past. Okay.
Thanks, Councillor Faulkner. So it's a very good point. These funds come from developments that haven't been able to or have chosen to commute the funds into an off-site, not delivering those affordable houses on-site. It actually represents a number of houses that haven't been delivered locally, affordable houses, and it's really important that we try and get these funds spent on affordable houses and at the same time bringing forward brownfield sites and regeneration schemes. So good that we are going to try and make it a bit easier to spend these funds. They have deadlines, of course. We all understand they have deadlines, these 106 funds, and they have to go back to the developers. So if the funds aren't spent in time, developer gets them back. So not only does the community not get affordable housing, we lose the opportunity to use the investment as well. So it's come through my portfolio, so I'm very happy to propose it. If I could have a seconder, please. Oh, Councillor Bernard. Councillor Peters. All those in favour? Thank you. That's unanimous. So we'll move on to item 11. You talked to Business Improvement District. It's Thomas Deary again to present.
Thank you, Leader. So this report sets out a very high-level summary introducing the concept of a Business Improvement District or a BID. How that might operate, how it might look in Uttoxeter, and it sets out next steps for further exploring feasibility of a bid in Uttoxeter. So within the report itself, Section 4 provides a summative overview of a business improvement district generally, so how they're formed and how they operate. Section 5 sets out things that a bid could achieve, more generally speaking, some of the types of initiatives that could be undertaken by a bid. Section 6 of the report starts to think about what a bid in Uttoxeter could look like, focusing on the type of levy that could be generated from the High Street area alone, but obviously consideration would need to be given to how much wider that bid boundary might want to stretch. And Section 7 of the report sets out the next steps in exploring a bid, which is fundamentally about tapping into the High Street Task Force resource that Dan mentioned earlier, but also undertaking a more detailed feasibility study commissioned externally. So that would be subject to a separate delegated decision, so there's no financial considerations within the report, but the recommendation is to approve the principle of commissioning a full feasibility study that we'd then look to take forward in the next financial year. Happy to take any questions on that, Leader.
Thank you. Is there any questions on this item from the Cabinet? Councillor Sankey.
I'd just like to support this. I think that this is an excellent initiative, and it also demonstrates our commitment that although there's a big focus at the moment on addressing Burton and moving forward on that one, we haven't forgotten the other parts of the borough. So I think it's well worth the initiative to progress this. So thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Sankey. So I'm happy to, again, this has come through my portfolio, so I'm happy to support this and propose it. I think that there's potentially a developing example in Uttoxeter. The Town Council have done quite a lot of work with something called Towns Forum, and a lot of that work I think can be funded and developed further if a bid was successful and the businesses there wanted to support the things that they are developing and sort of working up. So it needs a little bit more thought and a little bit more advice, which is why we need to go out to the market and ask for that consultancy expert advice. And I'd like to think we could bring this back to a future cabinet meeting and discuss it again, actually implementing it on the ground. So there's no other comments or questions, I'm happy to propose that. If I could have a seconder, please. Councillor Sankey, all those in favour? Thank you, that's unanimous. Okay, item 12, review of customer access, customer service centre, and I believe we've got Catherine Grimley to present.
Thank you, Leader. This report endorses a proposal to cease operation of generic face-to-face services at the customer service centres in Burton and Uttoxeter, moving to remote service delivery whilst maintaining pathways for vulnerable groups where required. Prior to the pandemic, the CSC's primary use was for revenues and benefits inquiries and the home of the Council's Housing Options Service. Customers are now choosing to access our services differently, and with digital services ever evolving, visitor numbers have been steadily declining year on year. Throughout the last 2 years, customers have had to access council services by alternative means, and largely officers have worked remotely from home. The quality of service has been maintained throughout, with call wait times remaining within corporate targets. And with the CSCs closed and staff being multidisciplined across revenues, benefits and customer contacts, means that resources can be placed where required more easily, responding to peaks in demand. When the centres reopened, the requirement for face-to-face services remained very low, with an appointment take-up rate of less than 10%, with customers choosing to continue with their behaviour change during lockdowns and move away from in-person visits. This has meant that people have been able to access information 24 hours a day online at a time to suit them without being restricted to office opening hours. The SBC website hits increased by almost 15% from 2020 to 21 to just short of 2.5 million, further highlighting the desire for information to be provided digitally. Large volume of visits to the centre to make a payment of council tax through the self-service payment kiosk or to provide evidence for scanning to support a claim for benefit. These are just a few examples of transactional low-value visits that unnecessarily draws on officer capacity, which could be better utilised elsewhere. Supporting the Council's digital strategy, referring to the Revenues and Benefits e-Services portal, Table 1 at paragraph 1.5 shows a 55% increase in subscriptions to the portal against pre-pandemic figures, demonstrating customer confidence in making digital channels the preferred method of interaction with the Council moving forward. Support for elderly and vulnerable groups has remained throughout the periods of closure, and the Housing Options Service has also seen a huge reduction in demand for face-to-face services, with no appointments being requested during the periods when the centre was open. The Council's Housing Outreach Officer has been meeting clients directly and providing further support where required. Visiting officer status is included within current job descriptions, so face-to-face visits could be considered where necessary. The requirement for the customer service centres, therefore, to remain open moving forward is no longer there. I'm happy to take any questions, Leader.
Thank you. Do we have any questions from Cabinet members on this? Councillor Peters.
Thank you. Thank you. It's a really interesting report, and it clearly sends a message to me that ESBC, we don't stand still. We are prepared to change and adapt the way we go about supporting the community. And it reinforces, I think, that ESBC do care about their communities, and we will accommodate them whenever the opportunity arises. So thank you very much for a very good paper, and keep up the good work. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Peters. Councillor Faulkner.
Just to follow on what Councillor Peters said, I think digital services have come on leaps and bounds thanks to the pandemic. It's probably changed people's views and ways of actually accessing our helplines. Rather than in face-to-face, they've used digital communications and found it very successful and found it takes less time to do. Where we have vulnerable people or people who do want face-to-face, there are opportunities to have those face-to-face sessions, so no one will be left behind. We will cover everyone with this, and there is no desire to actually stop face-to-face communications at all. This is just to ensure that we are making the best of our digital services, but we will see people face-to-face if that is necessary. Thank you.
Thank you, Councillor Faulkner. So I must say cease operation of face-to-face service delivery seems an ominous recommendation, but I'm assured and I'm confident that we are, as Councillor Peters say, moving with the times and you know, our digital services now are to such a good level that we are able to make this move. Also have confidence that we're not actually moving away from face-to-face for those that really need it. And I think Cathy mentioned elderly and vulnerable groups will still be able to access that service if necessary. So if there are no other comments or questions, I were happy to propose, if I could have a seconder, please, Councillor Faulkner. All those in favour? That's unanimous. Thank you. So we'll move into private now at this point. So I propose that in accordance with Section 100A4 of the Local Government Act 1972, that the press and public be excluded for the remainder of the meeting as it is